Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Gregor Erickson, photographer extraordinaire.
I would hope so.
But that barely even begins to express all that you do.
Yes.
It's not just hitting a button, nor is it in just one genre.
No.
Because there is commercial photography and there is fine art photography. I think there's certainly a line there, but you are in both worlds.
Yes, I try to gravitate to more of the fine art stuff, but I'm finding that nowadays it's good to be able to, you know, cross-pollinate yourself into other areas that can provide income. Mm-hmm. And also expand, I think, your skill sets. And I've been doing photography since I was 14 years old, and that was like years ago.
We won't tell. We won't run that sound.
Don't set that. So anyway, I started photography when I was 14 years old on the West Coast, and graduated to doing freelance work. And even then it was hard because that's, you know, in my late teens and early 20s, that was when you took film. Mm. And you had to be precise in the way that you dealt with a photograph and the composition of a photograph. And sometimes luck played into it, of course. But
sure.
That was when you took four rolls of film and you threw it into a bag, you sent it to the editor, and he called you and yelled at you because it wasn't what he wanted. Today, the digital world is a little different.
Oh, yeah.
And it's made life easier for photographers, a little bit more difficult for professional photographers.
Now, how so? That's interesting, because I would think, wow, it's, you know, everything's easy. Now, is it because everybody else is now rising?
Yeah, I think that's what's happening. The quality of the equipment has accelerated to a point where it's easy for someone to get a minimally good camera and tell everyone they're a professional.
Hmm.
When maybe they're not. But it's how you market yourself, and then how you begin to see through the eye of the camera. I have a website that what I've done is I have invited people to take a journey through my vision of light and color. That, I think, is the most important thing that any photographer can do. And I like fine art photography. I do a lot of landscape.
Mm-hmm.
which I'm pretty much noted for. I've done fashion and glamour. I've done commercial work. Coming up this Saturday, I'm going to be doing a shoot on a crane, putting up a big chiller on top of a roof in downtown Pittsburgh. So
glamorous.
Really glamorous. I got to love those beautiful pictures. Mm-hmm. That you're going to get out of that. So, but it's not like photographing beautiful women or handsome men. It's just...
Oh, darn.
Yeah.
Now, is it common for a professional photographer to... be working
in the fine art realm as well as the commercial?
Absolutely. And I've done a little bit of both. I exhibit at a gallery downtown. Am I allowed to say the name?
Oh, of course. Yes, we like to plug these galleries.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Especially if they're Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has great art galleries, let her rip.
There's a gal that owns a gallery. Her name's Connie, and Colleen. Mm-hmm. She has the 3G gallery at the right in the Federated Building.
I've heard of it. I need to visit. I have.
I have pieces of my work there. She has other photographers' work as well as folks who do jewelry and painting and that sort of genre. So the different mediums of art. She's a great lady who. Has been supporting me in putting my fine art work up there. There's so many different avenues that a photographer can go down in travel, but for me, my love has always been shooting the eye of the camera. Composition. I went to the Nikon school and back in the day, and what I found out from them is that always think about your photograph before you take it. And so many people don't. They just snap and go. And with automated cameras today, you can digitally, look at what you've got. Don't like it, you can just simply hit the erase button.
Right, right.
And so it does make it a little bit easier. However, you still have to have the eye. You still have to have that given talent.
Now, I have to think that in this day and age, with what we're seeing in technology, it is that truly is going to separate the professionals from the amateurs. Again, because as you said, with technology now, the equipment is so accessible to everybody.
Yep.
But it's really got to be that photographer's artistic eye that's going to set them apart.
Yeah, I would say that's true. As an artist, I think it's really important that people look at composition and creativity, and with today's software programs where you can manipulate art, sometimes people kind of carry that to an extreme. Mm-hmm. However, art is art, and no matter what you do with it as a photographer or as a painter or as a sculptor, it doesn't really matter what you do to the art. You can do whatever you want to the art,
sure,
because
sure.
It is art and it belongs to you. Mm. I've taken photographs and processed them in a Photoshop program to blend layers of photographs together to create an image that may not be real, but the thing is, it's real to me.
Mm-hmm.
and it's art for art's sake. And I think anybody who is truly an artist understands that art lies here and here.
Yeah.
And not necessarily just on a canvas or on a print.
And when it comes to photography, I think what stands out to me the most when I'm looking at a photographer's work sometimes is that they simply just chose this particular subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
That they said, this is a photograph, and mm-hmm. I'm going to look at this through my lens and capture that.
Right.
Nothing special's been done to it.
Nope.
It's just that their choice of subject.
Yeah.
And presenting it in a photograph is a big part of, I think, that eye.
Yeah, those to me, those are the purists, and I, at one time, I guess, would be considered a purist. Weston and Ansel Adams, they're always been my heroes.
Purist, what would be the opposite of purist as far as photography goes?
Experimentalist.
So what would an example of an experimentalist photo?
It might be a photograph that has been altered, or parts of other photographs put in with it, mm-hmm. blended to it, to create a piece of art
mm-hmm.
that may not be just this photograph behind us is one I took when I was in Utah. It is a accumulation of three exposures that are put together and are blended in a program, photographic program, that brings out the highlights and the shadows and the midtones of the photograph. So it creates a little bit more of a realism,
mm-hmm.
but yet you can push that to get something like what I have over my shoulder here, which is a cartoonish looking thing.
So an enhanced version of yeah, realism. So right, that would be beyond purism.
Yeah.
So you say you used to be a purist. What changed you? What did you harden? Did you get radical? What happened?
It's the digital age.
So you were given more tools.
Yeah.
And that's what brought you out of that.
And I think not only tools, but latitude, because it's accepted now that you can work with a medium like photography and use programs to enhance your photography without going so far out there that people say, well, you know, that really doesn't depict what I want. But again, art is in the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. And if people go to my website, they will see some real purist views, and then they might also see some things that are kind of out of the box.
So technology essentially is what, you know, caused your promoted right, your transition. Was that a difficult transition for you? Because look, I know some people, you know, that won't use an iPhone because it's like, I can't do it. I can't, you know, figure that. So was it a challenge to adapt to some of these new programs? I mean, there are things, I'm lucky I can get the hang of an iPhone and I have mastered that. But I've got friends I'm teaching Facebook to.
Okay? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what, yeah, was it a challenge for you to, you know, get into some of these new programs?
No, it wasn't really. Obviously, you know, with having grown up in the computer age, obviously the transition was very simple for me. But what I saw, I think, for the most part, like, I don't use my iPhone to capture photographs. I maybe have 30 photographs on my phone, and most of those are pictures of things that I need to buy.
But let me ask you, what is your opinion of the quality of the iPhone?
It's getting better. It's getting better. And there are photographers out there, believe it or not, who have made a genre out of photographing with iPhones, Androids, and the like.
When I got this phone, I was amazed that the quality of that photo was better than one of my separate piece cameras that I had bought a few years previously.
Yeah, you've seen that. That's a dramatic change just in the matter of 10 years. Mm. I've used, ever since I was a freelancer with AP, Associated Press, I used Nikon equipment. I still have my old Nikon equipment in the closet. But yet the glass that, or the lenses that can still be used on some of the equipment today. Oh. Although, albeit manually, of course.
Sure.
But with new equipment now, you've gone from, I can remember back as I switched over from film to digital, you were looking at maybe a camera that had an average size sensor with, you know, 6 megapixels. And now you're looking at equipment that has full frame, some of the full frame they have 36 and 38 pixels, and the file sizes are in the, you know, megabytes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, huge files that you have to store.
Sure.
Which is part of the dilemma for a digital photographer, is the fact that you have, you know, thousands of images. When I go on a shoot, I'll take 600 images.
Yeah.
You got a place to store that. So, you know, I have, you know, stacks of you know, portable drives that everything is duplicated in case something happens.
Now, are you the type to never leave home without a camera?
No, I'm not. And in all honesty, you know, if I go out for the evening, I generally don't take a camera with me. If I'm going on a road trip somewhere, I'll throw my scouting camera in with me. And if I see something I like, I'll shoot. But my scouting camera is every bit as good as cameras that were back 5, 10
sure,
years ago.
Because I have to imagine, especially our photographers that work more in the fine art arena, there's got to be those moments where they see something and are like, God, I wish I had my camera.
Oh boy,
what have your biggest misses been? What keeps you awake at night?
Oh, I don't know if I've had any big misses, Brian, but I have to say that there have been times where I've gone by. It was really interesting. I was coming back from the I was going to the West Coast. I was in the Columbia Gorge. And I had my, I was in my car, and I drove by, and at 75 miles an hour on I-80 or I-84 going into Portland, Oregon.
Is that a legal speed,
That was
sir?
A legal speed.
Okay, we can publish this.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think it's 70. Oops, a little bit over.
We'll let it slide.
Anyway, here I'm driving along, and I look to the right, and here is a absolutely gorgeous bald eagle sitting on an old snag, just kind of surveying his domain and looking, you know, because it was right on the Columbia River, looking for that moment where he could say, aha, lunch. And so I kept driving, and I thought to myself, you know, if I drag out all of my bags, stop, I'm on a freeway, okay, a highway, big, very busy highway, and if I pulled over now, I could you know, rifle through all my stuff in the back of my car and get all of this, all the equipment I needed to mount my long lens and the extender and everything that I needed.
And by
to get
then, that eagle's going to be 5 miles away.
He's going to have lunch. You know, he'll be sitting at a, you know, at a cocktail lounge, you know, at 5 p.m. having a martini.
That's how I recognize him. Yeah, there you go.
But anyway, that was
look at
I
that.
Think
that
was,
sticks in your head. See,
I know it. That, and I'm sorry that I didn't stop and go back and at least try.
Here's what I recommend.
He was unbelievable.
Let's call Central Casting. Get a bald eagle. Okay. Let's set this up.
We can do that.
Get an old snag. All right. Try and get we might have to do a backdrop to get Pittsburgh to look like. Where was this again?
Columbia Gorge in Oregon.
Right. So, there are probably some places around Pittsburgh that could resemble Columbia Gorge
on
a certain day.
One thing good about Pittsburgh, you can mimic just about anywhere.
Thank you, because this comes up a lot in these Bergvivant interviews. I've talked to a lot of people that work in film here and, you know, talking about the types of films that come to Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And why Pittsburgh? And we always come to the same conclusion that Pittsburgh itself is a good actor.
It is
Pittsburgh
a great actor.
Is dynamic like that. It can be gritty New York. It can be posh, you know, Manhattan, and it's becoming very popular now in a lot of these, you know, travel publications, Most Livable City. But for most of America, you can put the Pittsburgh skyline in a movie, and it's not as identifiable as New York, Boston, Chicago.
It's truly amazing.
Pittsburgh's a good actor.
Yeah.
So I imagine as many film producers are coming here, many photographers must be as well.
Absolutely. And some of the work that I do with the film industry itself is I do headshots for actors and actresses. In fact, I've got a couple that I'm hopefully going to be scheduling here in the next few weeks. And then there's always the job opportunities that come up as a still photographer for film. Now, I've done two short films here in Pittsburgh. One's going to be, I think they're in post editing now and should be done within a month or two. It's called Always a Bridesmaid. That was written by Wendy Grube, and that was directed by Jim Helfrich. And cute movie, funny. It's a short. It's going to be, you know, 25 minutes long, but it's a hoot.
Did you ever shoot any like big movies?
No. I'd like to get into it though.
Yeah.
I'd like to. That's my next venture.
All right. Now if that happened, and who's a star, a movie star that you just idolize? You think it's just
Bee's
knees.
I think Michael Keaton right now is one.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely. A Pittsburgh guy.
Let's say you're put on a Keaton film,
yeah.
Okay, to do still photography for it. You know, are you able to kind of, would you be able to direct Michael Keaton and say, you know, come into this light, this is going to be, you just sort of are subservient, they're click
yeah,
the picture,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, you're right next to the cameraman. It was interesting when we were doing, when I did another movie too, it was called Zombie Woman, and it was shot at night, and it was really challenging. But when you're doing that kind of thing, you're literally sitting right with the cameraman.
Taking directions from them.
And it's stay out of the way. You know, you got to sound limp to sound, you know, soundproof your camera. And if you get out of line, the director says, "You're in my shot."
Right. All right. Well, okay. Let me give you this what if. Okay. So put yourself in that position. You're doing, you know, you're zooming in. Michael Keaton's got spinach stuck in his teeth.
Yeah.
Nobody notices.
Believe me, I would tell him.
Or would you just edit it out?
Well, you can Photoshop it out, but
right.
I would tell him, he says, "Mike, you're..."
Okay. This is important for me to know, just in case I'm ever thrown into this situation.
Yeah, and if you ever have spinach on your teeth, I will let you know.
Okay, thank you. Usually it's an olive stuck in my teeth from one of these. We're having hypnotic martinis. This is a little new, and you made these. I want to say thank you, Gregor.
From scratch.
This is a nice treat here. They really pop on film. This is great. So we got to talk to, you know, I think Hypnotic owes me a check now that we're
believe me, big royalty.
Yeah, and I we're enjoying their product today. So let's talk again about artistic versus commercial.
Okay.
Because from what you have said, it seems like that a lot of artists do, you know, cross that
they cross
border
the boundary
into both. And I know clearly what the difference is between the two. You know, art is art, and commercial is for maybe a sales or promotional purpose.
Or advertising.
Right. But I have to guess that there are a lot of qualities from the point of view of the photographer that cross over between the two. Or are you approaching each one of those genres with a completely different technique?
Wow, that's a great question. And I think for the most part, you use all of the basics are pretty much the same. It's how you approach the subject that's a little bit different. Now, you may in a commercial shoot, you may be dealing with certain circumstances that are totally beyond your control, such as lighting, for instance. Mm. Where if you're in a studio or you're shooting a model, and you see that there's light in her face that's not right, you can make all the adjustments that you, and you don't have the chance to do that commercially, especially if you're an on-site shoot. And so that's one of the things that you have to kind of be a little bit cognizant of. Mm. With a shoot, I was down in Utah on a shoot, and that's where this one came from. What I did is I spent probably, I would say, 15 minutes, 20 minutes just setting that shot up. And then because it's sunset, I shot probably 100 separate shots so that I could get just the right one. And that's the difference, I think, between the fine art and the commercial end of it. It's the time that you spend looking at your subject and the time that you spend setting up for the subject. And you may not do the same in certain commercial things where, like sports photography, there's no time. So it's you're shooting six to eight frames a second. And you're getting that shot, and that was the thing that's the thing I think that really sets the commercial work with the artistic work.
Now, what I have always felt is unfair for photographers is that an artist that, let's say, uses paint and canvas has 100% control.
Yes, they do.
Over everything that's happening there.
Yeah.
As a photographer, especially outside of a studio.
Yeah.
There's a lot that is not under your control. You probably maybe only sometimes have 50% control, or not even.
Right.
Because you're capturing whatever's happening in front of you. So how much of this is planning? How much of it is chance?
And luck.
Right.
I'll relate a story to you that I was shooting up at Mount Washington a year ago in 4th of July. Mm-hmm. Great fireworks. I was up there, had all set up with my tripod and my camera, and clouds started building up over the skyline of Seattle, and I was shooting
I'm thinking. we're cutting you off.
Yeah.
You said Mount Washington. We're talking about Washington,
I'm
Pittsburgh,
originally,
right?
From Seattle. So
oh, okay.
And the Seahawks are playing.
What are you talking about? To me, about Super Bowl stuff? if the Steelers aren't in it, I don't even recognize this as Super Bowl.
Well, I do root for the home team, but I'm a Seahawk fan.
Oh, well, okay.
Anyway, so it's coming over, the clouds are forming over Pittsburgh, and I'm looking at this, and I'm saying, oh, it's going to rain, and the fireworks display is just going to be, it's going to be a washout. So all of a sudden it started to thunder, and fireworks started, and all of a sudden I'm shooting away, and these are long exposures. These are 5-second exposures, you know. And all of a sudden, lightning strike. And I looked at the guy next to me, and I said, hey, did you get that? Because he was from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And he says, I don't know. Let me check. He says, nope, I didn't get it. I looked at mine. I'd got it. And it's a fabulous photograph of the city with the fireworks, and then all of a sudden the lightning strike. It looks like it's hitting the city.
Wow.
So, wine luck? Yeah. That's some of the lack of control that you have. Not more than 3 minutes later, and I shot another one, and I got another lightning strike.
So sometimes it works in your favor.
It is. Blind luck leads sometimes to blind luck.
Sure.
So...
Now, at an event like that, 4th of July on Mount Washington, is that like photographer heaven?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's up there in a cluster. Do you see the same people a lot of times?
Yeah, actually, I did see a photograph that was posted in a magazine that had won an award. And it was the same shot that I got.
Because you were probably 3 feet from the guy that took it.
Yeah, I was probably... Yeah, wow. You could have hit a rock. You could have thrown a rock and hit 50 of us.
So then what was the difference between his photo and yours winning that award, maybe except for the fact that he entered it into this contest?
Yeah, he submitted it.
All right, so. Well, submit more stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, this is my just layman's advice.
I do have a photograph that I took in Utah, which was, that I submitted, was selected by Smithsonian Magazine. So
now that's no small deal.
No, Smithsonian's 55,000 entries, and they chose 300.
Wow.
Yeah, I was very humbled by that.
So what do you feel in this field of yours and, you know, throughout the span of your career has been your greatest success or greatest achievement?
Man. Well, you know, I quit photography, and I didn't quit photography. I turned my vocation into an avocation back in the early 70s when it was very difficult to find work. And as a young guy, I was asked by AP to go to Vietnam as a combat photographer, and my dad talked me out of it, and because I'm an only child, and he said if something would happen, you'd kill your mother. So I said, well, okay. And then, you know, after that, you get married, you have kids. You know, I had to get a real job, went back to school, ended up getting my education and worked for a while. Kept photography as an avocation. And then up until about 5 years ago, I decided, I'm going to start my own business. I'm going to get back into it, because that's my passion. I mean, I love photography. I love everything about it. I have friends of mine now that I've met who are photographers, and some of them just do one genre. I have a very good friend and a very good mentor here in Pittsburgh. And he shoots bikinis and lingerie and
poor guy
models. Yeah, I was thinking about that when I was on Utah, and I thought, well, shoot, you know, he's shooting these gorgeous models, and I'm out shooting rocks. What's wrong with that?
Talk to your agent.
I got to change that somehow.
What, throw a bikini on the rock or something.
But he makes a very good living doing it. So you don't have to do just one, you know, you have to do multiple things. You can do one genre and do very, very well if you're known. And it's getting known. That's the thing. Getting your name out there is the most critical part of the whole thing.
So for somebody who is trying to transition from amateur photography into professional photography, aside from take lots of pictures, what advice might you have for them?
I would say, I think it would have benefited me if I'd gone to an art institute. I think you develop your eye and your technique by learning from others. You obviously, through your career or through your development as an artist, you develop your own style. Mm. And I think that's important. But you need to learn from others. And you need to have some business savvy. And I think anybody who wants to go from amateur to professional, you know, my advice would be, it's going to be a while before you're going to eat.
Get used to it, huh?
Get used to not having a whole lot and not making a lot of money. But the thing is that if that's your passion, follow it.
Stick with it. Yeah. Persevere.
I was fortunate because I you know, I got an education, got a good job, was able to do well. And now, after that's all been all over, and that's kind of been in my past, I've never been happier.
That's good. I'm happy to hear this.
Yeah.
Let's never toast really, to yeah, that,
cheers,
I think.
Cheers, cheers.
To happiness.
To Berg de Vaux.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much. So how can we follow you and your work? What is the best way to see what you've done?
I have a website. Thank you for asking. I have a website, gregorericksonproductions.com. And my name is spelled... I'm Swedish. I came to this country when I was 4 years old, immigrated here with my parents to the West Coast. And so I moved here in 1990 for a job transfer. And so I'm not quite a Yinzer yet.
Yet?
I'm getting there.
Like it's contagious?
No, I'm getting there. I'm slowly learning the dialogue. So anyway, got here in 1990, fell in love with the people. This is the greatest town in the world. It really is. I miss the West Coast, but you cannot beat the people in Pittsburgh.
I think we need to do a book of photography that's just the people of Pittsburgh, and it's just head-on shots of everybody from every walk of life.
Great
that's
idea.
Here.
Great
let's
idea.
Let's do that. Yeah. First, let's check to make sure it hasn't been done. Because it's such a good idea.
It is.
That I have to think somebody's thought of it.
I've never seen it, but the thing is that I'm working on a compilation of photographs right now of Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And I'd like, within the next 3 to 5 years, I'm probably going to publish something. Don't know quite what it is.
Well, yet. What we've suggested is a very broad scope. What if we narrow it down and we just call the book Happy Hour in Pittsburgh, and we go around with a camera.
I'd be good.
5 o'clock into like every bar and get a picture one person from every bar in Pittsburgh during happy hour, and that's the book Happy Hour in Pittsburgh.
I think
a photographic journal by Gregor Erickson.
Yeah. Yeah, my name is spelled Gregor, Greger. So many people spell it with an OR, and then when they search on the website, they don't.
Well, we got to school them right here.
Yeah. Yeah. GregorErickSonProductions.com.
Very good. We'll visit you there.
I'm sure you will, and I hope you do.
We will. Thank you for chatting with us.
Well, thanks
today.
Very much, Brian.
This was
a distinct pleasure.
We've really gotten to know you.
Yeah, thanks so very much.
And we'll continue to get to know you from your work.
I hope so.
Bravo.
Thank you.
In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Berg Vivant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvivant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.